Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're due for your biannual cleaning, something you usually forget and would rather not remember. But you just got a reminder from the Gentle Dentist in Worthington. Call 614-431-3311.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners. Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now. Welcome back, everybody. We are having a really good conversation with Laura Coates. She is the author.
Why do you sound surprised? Hold on, Michael. Why do you sound surprised by that?
No. That's okay, Madam Prosecutor. Sometimes I'm not surprised, but you know, sometimes you don't know how conversations goes because this is heavy stuff. It's, you know, it's legal, it's law, and it's justice system. And you talk about it with such fluidity and ease. And it's not one where I have to go get my Black's Law Dictionary and start explaining to the audience what they just heard.
Yeah, thank you.
So that's the book, folks. That's what I think. You're going to walk away from the read feeling, A, you've kind of gone through this journey with this woman and her career and the choices she had to make and the things that she's observed. And you have a little bit better understanding of how all of these little pieces kind of come together. So forgive me if I sound surprised. I'm really not surprised. And like I said, I've watched your analysis on CNN, and what you said before we went to break is very much what you do. You are very much, here are the facts. This is not my opinion. This is what the law is. These are the facts in the matter that we're discussing. And this is how, you know, the judge could interpret it. The jury may see it, et cetera, et cetera. So you walk people through it. And I think that's good because a lot of times in this environment where the big lie is the prevailing narrative, that a significant portion of our population is tending to buy into. It is refreshing to have someone just kind of put it out there on the street the way it is. And there's no agenda, there's no bias. This is what it is. So that's what my tone was about.
It's giving you a hard time.
I know. But you've done a very good job with the storytelling portion, because a lot of times, as we discussed at the very beginning, these types of narratives and stories can be rather matter of fact and rather pedantic and all of that. And you kind of lose the person in the story. Mm-hmm. There were a number of them, but the one that stood out to me, I think it's in the 10th chapter, where you talk about the judge, you know, and the woman who, the young woman who is accusing her father, a man who's not her biological father, but someone who's played that male role in her household with her mom, go through this trial and how the judge viewed her. Mm-hmm. And tell us about that, because it really was an interesting way you were almost as if you were a third party observer in that chapter, where I couldn't tell if you were shocked and you kind of caught yourself sort mm-hmm. of observing these things outside of, you know, the typical bounds or norms in which you would as a prosecutor or what. So walk us through this story and how that and how that shaped your view of the system.
Well, you know, it's that chapter, it's called No One Who Has Been Raped Would Ever. And it was sort of a phrase of that I remember growing up and hearing about the accusations and victim blaming and what a woman would wear and how she would act. Even more generally, who is entitled to be thought of as a victim in general, across the board, whether it's sexual assault or otherwise. And sort of the expectations that people have of who's entitled to be a victim and what you would act like and when you would report it and what you would say and how you would feel and sort of the dramatics you think that are happening, then you really actually see what in reality it looks like, what people's choices are, how they respond, that victimization has many different approaches and faces of victims and survivors. And one of the reasons you choose especially delayed reporting cases, which we hear a lot about in the news, right. Bill Cosby case would be a prime example of delayed reporting, the Harvey Weinstein Me Too discussions about the reasons for delayed reporting. You've seen the spectrum of people's reactions to it, or when did that really happen, and the skepticism and the judgment. And so realizing that prosecutors oftentimes have the opportunity for delayed reporting cases to sometimes approach to just a bench trial, which you mean where it's not a jury, it's going to be a judge deciding the case. And you do it because you expect judges to sort of silence all that judgment and silence all the preconceived notions and just approach the case from what the facts actually demonstrate.
Right.
And this chapter, and of course, we have this stereotype that a woman would have an automatic level of sympathy and empathy for another woman's experience. And this chapter talks about what it was like watching a woman, a judge, on a bench trial, acting precisely how you would expect the worst of the jurors to behave.
Right.
And that robe somehow did not should not have made you assume that they were totally not just on the up and up. It's not what I mean, as if she was somehow complicit, but a criminal. I don't mean that. I mean that did not guarantee impartiality. And so even at the level of a judge, where we assume that robe is going to, prevent and block the bias that we all bring in, it did not happen. And the experience of watching this young girl experience and be destroyed by that, what that felt like watching, was as much a part of the story of, in an era we say, believe women, and we champion that, and people shout it from the mountaintops, and it's a sword and a shield, and everyone is supposedly on board with this notion. Again, who we are as a society on paper and Twitter, versus what it looks like in real life in a courtroom.
So were there episodes like that, and just how you saw the system, the criminal justice system itself operating, functioning, how, defendants were pushed through it. Did that begin to feed or lead into the thinking, the reasonings and thoughts you had around the criminal justice itself, where you would begin to question this system as a system?
Yes.
What was that like? And what has that been like?
I still question, and I still wonder and reflect on that time in my life. And also, there was always this dilemma I felt too, because it was, are you more useful as an agent of the system or a spectator of the system?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And, I know you yourself have probably wrestled with the idea of, am I more impactful as an incumbent or somebody who is commenting on it and using your experience and insight?
Just went through that.
I mean, it's this dilemma. And we probably have in other aspects of our lives. I mean, not just what you and I are doing specifically professionally. And so I wrestled with that, Michael. I wrestled with the idea of, am I sort of throwing in the towel and saying, this is too hard, it's difficult, so I'm not going to do it, and choosing the path of least resistance and perceived luxury. And is that selfish of me to do, to acknowledge the dilemmas, acknowledge the complications, but just take it on the chin and keep going. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I grappled with. For me, it was better. For me, it was more impactful in my mind, and I hope in my practice to use the experiences that I had to now inform how people can view and hopefully change and shape the justice system. But also recognizing that, you know, we talk about justice, but it's a system. I mean, it's not just one case.
Right.
It's never going to be one verdict any more than our democracy is contingent on one legislative action. It's part of an entire system. And I think that people have to, in their own private moments and those wee small hours of the moment in the morning, decide whether your utility is better served within or without.
Does being a mom play into that as well? Particularly when you see young people trapped in this system, how do you find yourselves? I remember as Lieutenant Governor going to visit Eager Street Academy in Baltimore City. And that's where they housed 13 to 18 year old boys and girls. And walking in there and looking into the eyes and the faces of these young men, and having two sons who at that time when I was in office were, you know, 14 and 11. I'm just sitting there, I'm just overwhelmed by the moment, because it was almost, and I could really identify what Barack Obama had said about Trayvon Martin, you know, in that sense that, you know, that could have been me. And certainly as a father with two boys, that could be my boys, and how would I feel? And it really put an urgency behind the work that I did in the criminal justice space. In fact, it turned out, I found out later, that I was really the first elected official to ever not just visit, but to come back. And every year I would go back and visit the young men and women, you know, two, sometimes three times a year. Got into a big battle with our GSA, General Services Administration, because I wanted to get used computers because they had high school set up into the school. Oh, well, you can't do that. Well, why can't I? You're going to throw the computers away. Why don't we let these kids have it? So that dad thing took over, and how I began to look at the system. And then the lieutenant governor piece was there because I knew, at least in the office I held, I could do something, or at least attempt to do something about it. You're in that similar situation where, you're a prosecutor, but you're a mom. You're a prosecutor, but you are a citizen. And so you've already touched on a little bit of some of that conflict, but beyond the conflict, was it something that you felt made it a little bit easier, or the passion felt different? How did being the mom side of Laura Coates play into the prosecutor side of Laura Coates?
You know, I'm so glad that you shared that story, because one, it helps, I think, everyone to get to know your heart even more, number one. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so powerful, because we have to stop. I mean, even though it's useful to compartmentalize, you didn't check yourself at the door. You brought yourself into the room. Yes. And into the room, you didn't just take a seat. You had a seat there, and who you were. And I think that's important. And for me, you know, I wrote the book, and some of these stories talk about the idea of, I was pregnant at times. I had my babies back to back, only about 18 months apart. And so I had my little stair step babies. But I remember thinking about, and I wrote it from the idea of, I wanted my children to know what I was carrying while I was carrying.
Wow.
And I wanted them to understand that. And I think that as a mother, it changed really the way I approached cases. And I think I, like so many people who have it drilled into their head, that You're supposed to pretend that, you know, you're not pregnant until you're like getting ready to give birth, and right. it might make you look weak, et cetera. If you you're emotional in some way. I think for me, when I became a mother, it shattered constraints for me. I saw humanity from a very different lens. I thought about, this could be my child, whether it was the person who was victimized
right.
or the person who was the defendant. And in doing so and shaping it, I had to look at it from, you know, it elevated my level of humanity. And I wasn't somebody who, you know, was a Scrooge before and thought,
right.
but until you experience that moment of how it shatters it, how it changes everything. My father once said to me, I remember when I told him I was pregnant with my first child, he was so excited and overwhelmed and happy. And he said, you know what, Laura, being a mother will be like, be prepared, because being a mother from here out, you will have your heart live outside of your body. Just, you'll never know what that means until it happens. And I now know what it's like to have my heart live outside of my body, but it also is able to see things without my own constraints, without the things that I'm shielding it from. And it allows me to think about things in a very different way. And so it helped, I thought, being a better prosecutor, ironically,
right.
but it also at times made me have to take that pause and just think to myself, the approach. And sometimes I had to steel myself to have the resolve to walk in and, you know, be savage when I needed to be, but gentle when I could.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
All right, America, you asked for it. Or maybe you didn't, but either way, we have to talk. You're just in kind of a crazy place right now, Mr. and Mrs. USA. So, we are going to sit down a couple of times a week and work it out between us. The way Americans do. On a podcast. Hosted by Beowulf Rocklin. Weird name. Weird news. Weird politics. Weird country. Facepalm America. Listen to Facepalm America, a podcast that laughs at America and its politics, from Beowulf Rocklin, producer of The Rick Unger Show. Facepalm America, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever you download your digital distractions in audio form.
I'm Dr. Andrew Jacobs, host of the Sports Psychology Hour. Is your New Year's resolution to become stronger, healthier, and more resilient? Then start with the Rewire Fitness Neuro Performance app. Rewire Fitness takes a holistic approach to achieving peak performance, letting you strengthen both your body and mind with Rewire's integrated resilience training system. Go to winnersunlimited.com/rewire. Click Learn More to sign up for your free 7-day trial of Rewire Fitness. That's winnersunlimited.com/rewire.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.